Fostering can be so consuming that your identity becomes being a foster parent. How to have an identity beyond fostering. That's coming up next. Welcome to the Fostering Marriage Podcast, a podcast devoted to helping you keep your marriage the priority and make fostering fit into it, not the other way around.
Today, we are talking about finding an identity outside of being a foster parent. So, back in time, many, many years ago, when our two biological kids were still little, and by little, I mean itty-bitty babies, we moved to Tennessee, and everything at that point really shifted for me, because that's when I truly became a stay-at-home mom. I left my job behind and didn't restart it for quite some time. And so everything started shifting at that point, and being at home was really hard for me. I mean, I wasn't producing an income. I was just at home, and I was changing diapers, and I was making meals, and I was cleaning the house, and it was all these mundane tasks. And I really, really struggled with this new role. So I needed to find my way and find new friendships and find just a whole new direction.
Yeah. So today we're going to do this interview where I'm going to be interviewing you on pretty much like your story and your insights into this whole idea of identity. And because we can look back in your story and our story and see like your identity as a stay-at-home mom was really changing. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to get into this. This is actually part one of a two-part series, guys, we're going to do on this whole topic of identity and self-perception and how important clarity on all of this stuff is in terms of our thinking and decision-making and emotions, and because how we perceive ourselves is so important. And so we're really going to highlight that in this two-part series. But today, we're going to dive in and we're really going to, I'm going to interview you on, because you are the stay-at-home mom. Like I went to work and played with adults every day, and you are the stay-at-home mom. So identity, not everyone is familiar with that term, or you've never done any work in this area of exploring your identity, and this is a new concept, or maybe you've done a lot of work on this whole idea. But identity is how Mary Beth and I look at it, how I teach it professionally. It's how you see yourself. And again, as I said earlier, this is vitally important. So to how we think and how we make decisions. And when it comes to self-perception, many people just aren't happy with who they are. And they aren't happy with just themselves, and therefore they feel not good enough. They feel not important. They feel insignificant as a human being. And like you look at your situation as a stay-at-home mom, and you are, you know, you're changing diapers and you're getting thrown up on, and your kids are crying and you're exhausted and they need a nap and they won't nap. And it's in that tactical, everyday, minute by minute, hour by hour life, especially of being a stay-at-home parent, where you're in it nonstop for hours and hours. And a parent can adopt an identity of, I'm just a mom. Or I'm just this, and I'm just that. And it becomes this self-defeating type of a mindset. Mm-hmm. So we reached out at one point a long time ago on Facebook asking for, you know, what kind of topics do people in the fostering world want us to talk about? And this was one of those, was this whole idea of identity outside of fostering. And so we have put together this two-part series that hopefully is very helpful, because we're going to cover a lot of ground in this two-part series. So let's dive into this interview where, again, I'm going to interview you and ask you a whole bunch of questions here because we're coming on this two-part series. We're coming from this perspective of if you're the parent or you're the married person struggling with identity as like you feel like I'm just a parent or I'm just a foster parent and all I ever do even is talk about my kids when I'm with other adults and all you can't like you feel like it's like I can't escape being a parent world. And you feel like your identity is nothing than being a parent. This is what this two-part, that's the major assumption that we're making, that we're speaking to you in this two-part series. Because the assumption we're making is people like in my role, that yes, I'm a parent, yes, I'm married, but I spend so much of my time at work and I'm with adults and I'm doing my job. So this wasn't as much of a struggle for me, and I know it's not as much of a struggle for those of us who work and leave the home rather than the person that's basically constantly a parent. And then even when their spouse comes home from work, now we're both in parenting mode. And there's not a lot of focus on the marriage. So your life just feels, it feels like everything, parenting and taking care of littles is just very all-consuming. So let's dive in here. So for one thing we discussed when we were discussing this podcast episode is this idea of money. And can you mention this earlier, is financially contributing. How did not financially contributing anymore impact you?
Well, I think it's important to go back to how I was raised. And there was such a value placed on an education and a career. And so for me, that was very important. And it was part of who I saw as a valuable part of myself, as having a career. So it wasn't even the amount of money. It was that I was contributing to society. I was contributing to the family in this way. And so when it came time for me to come home and not work anymore, it was difficult because I was now giving up something that for decades had been poured into me. This is important. This is valuable. This is what you should be doing.
Do you think it'd have made that much of a difference if you'd have grown up in a home that said, hey, don't achieve in career or education? If the message was a, hey, you're going to be a parent, be a wonderful parent, focus on being a parent. What if that was the pervasive message? Do you think it would have made a big difference for you?
I think it would have made a significant difference. I mean, maybe not entirely, because I think even if that had been the message, if I had gotten out into the world and started making money and having this career, I think I still could have struggled with it. But with that just mindset of, this is so important, it was challenging.
I think this is really highlights a thing that as parents, we don't often think a lot about when we're parenting and we're messaging to our children and we're telling them what's important, is that I don't think we consciously think that, hey, I am shaping their identity. I am shaping where they're going to derive significance and self-worth from. Because again, it's the power of the parent. I think we think that's a good thing, and therefore they should go on to actually do those things. And there isn't ill intent in this. I think there's just at times a lack of education about when we're messaging as parents and we're raising our kids, we're actually helping establish their identity. Because in your case, mom and dad said, fill in the blank, okay, then that's what's important.
Yeah.
So I also was raised, and I came from in that achievement household of career is important, success is important, education is important, you've got to go get a good job and to make your way. Like, that was a pervasive message in my home, and there are pros and cons to these things. So I can very much relate to you and having that so instilled in me. And the interesting thing is I remember going all the way through school, up to college, like through high school, I was a sucky student. Like, you were a great student. I wasn't. Yeah, I know. Yeah, if you're familiar with Harry Potter and you've been sorted, like Ravenclaw over here and Hufflepuff over here with me. And you're so studious and academic. Like, you have a 4.0 as a master's degree. But for me, I turned it on when I got to college, because it was college stands between me right now sucking and actually being successful. So flip the switch, Joel, and kick it into gear. And that's what I did. But I did it differently than you, but I so relate to having that kind of influence and that achievement type of a household. So tell me about when you have this emotion of guilt over not contributing equally, and how that guilt came into play, and how you just navigated through that.
Oh, that's a good question. Okay, so I think a lot of it wasn't too bad at first, because initially I quit my full-time job and was teaching part-time from home. And that's when we had our firstborn. And so I was still contributing, but I was also a mom, and I saw value in being a stay-at-home mom with him, but I just you know, I don't know, I was still contributing. And so move forward to our move to Tennessee, and we had our second born, and I left the career behind completely. I just didn't value changing diapers and making meals. I hate cooking anyway, people. I hate it. I do it. I serve my family, but it's just, I don't enjoy it. And so it's like, I'm making meals, I'm cleaning the house. It's these tasks that almost can feel menial. But the thing is, they're so important. And at the time, though, I was just like, I could just get a job and do something with my brain. I don't need to use my brain to change a diaper or to clean the house. I mean,
yeah, and this especially, this is like a competing lifestyle compared to the one that you were told that you need to have.
Yeah.
And how you interpreted your parents and that whole message.
Right.
So next question is, how can a mom who has gifts and talents and an education, and or not just a mom, if you're a stay-at-home dad, let's say you're the dude in your home, apply this again. Our assumption in this two-part series is that you're more of a stay-at-home parent, therefore you're struggling with a lack of contentment and you have this whole identity struggle. So if that's neither of you listening, apply the information we're teaching, obviously, to where it actually fits you in your life and to what actually is relevant to you. So, like, you have gifts and talents, and how can a parent who has gifts and talents and an education, but they're not using them today, what do they do with that? And how do they navigate that? And how do they feel better about themselves?
Man, I didn't feel better for a while. I mean, I was struggling because I wasn't using any of that, and it felt very wasted. And it got to a point that I had to just kind of change a little bit of what I was doing. So I did eventually start teaching again a little bit. And then I started finding some other outlets and finding some other friendships to help fill in the gap, I guess, if you will, because I went from creativity, productivity, and all of that to none of it. And so I guess I was just like, man, I gotta figure something out. And when I say it took some time, I mean, this is a years long process. This wasn't months long.
Yeah. And so how much do you think not having those friendships, having moved from DC to Tennessee, feeling isolated?
Yeah.
How much did that contribute?
That was huge. And also, I mean, I had expectations because we had lived in Tennessee before. And so I had friendships here. But living in Nashville as a single person was very different from moving back to the suburbs married with children. And so those friendships didn't actually pan out exactly the way that I had expected.
Yeah, I mean, they're in different places. A lot of them are married. We're distant because we're living down south of Nashville.
Yeah.
A lot of them weren't single anymore, and people were married.
And everybody
with
had
kids
kind of moved on, and so a lot of those friendships changed. And so it was a matter of finding new friendships.
Yeah.
And that takes time and it takes work. It's like dating. Sucks.
It can. Yeah. It's like, what did you do though? I mean, because you kept grinding at that. You didn't give up on that and leave yourself isolated.
Well, I mean, a lot of it was, you know, there's all those meetup apps or whatever, or take the kids out to parks or whatever it was where I was going to be around other parents and be able to have conversations that were, you know, with words instead of just, Mama's over here. Peekaboo. You know, like there's only so much that a person can take, you know? So, I mean, it was a matter of going out and finding those friendships and just working at it and discovering, okay, you're great for surface level conversations. I really enjoy that. Our friendship isn't going to go deeper. And, you know, over time, those friendships came, but it takes time.
Once you have the friendships, a lot of struggles that people have are talking about things other than being a mom or a parent.
Yeah.
Or talking about the kids. because typically you're there with an adult and mm-hmm. there all the kids are.
With the kids. And that's the common
bond.
Yep, that's the common
is
bond.
Is kids. It's like, what do you do? What's your advice to people of like, how do we talk about things other than that?
Oh my gosh. Intentionality. I mean, if you're not one of those people that's like, well, what do I talk about? I mean, think about it beforehand. Just come up with some, what are things that are interesting to you? You know, read some things on the internet. We have the internet. I mean, keep up with some stuff and then, you know, so that you're able to talk to people about things. And I mean, it's okay if some of that's just surface level stuff, because when you think about it, that is often how a lot of friendships start.
I find that it for certain personality styles that without having deeper, more connecting conversation with someone, that you can leave the social encounter and then you can feel even more alone or even more isolated, because now it's like, oh my gosh, now I was with an adult or with making a new friend and we didn't connect. Yeah. All we did was talk about the kids the whole time. Now I feel even worse about myself.
Yeah. And sometimes I think that's even true of just talking about surface level stuff because you didn't really connect. And it does take time, but you have to be vulnerable. You have to be willing to just go there with people. And some people, I mean, you're going to find somebody eventually if you keep working at it that you just connect with. I mean, one of my dearest friends now, it was so funny because she moved into our neighborhood and we got talking, and it turns out that her husband was going to work where I used to work. And so we had that connection. And so we're like, hey, why don't we just watch your kids while you unpack the house? I'm like, we can stay out front.
It was
you
so
don't
funny.
Know us.
I know.
You
we
don't
knew
know
them
us.
For like we'll an just... hour. And I remember that conversation so well.
And the husband was like, shoot, take them all. Go for it.
I know. I remember Zach was like, well, we asked. It's like, hey, can we just take your kids? Because there were, you know, a few of them and they're moving in. And it's like, we know what this is like.
Yeah.
And we ask, it's like, hey, can we, if you, like, we just met, but can we take your kids? We're two doors down. And Zach's like, I'm not going to say no. And I was so glad that they take us up on the offer. And then again, now that was years ago.
And
she's one of your best friends.
Yeah. I mean, she's fantastic. And we still get together as much as we can. I mean, we have kind of different schedules and stuff. But it was one of those things that it started from that. And we did have the common bond of he and I had worked at the same place. And so we
Zach
already
was roasting coffee at the time when
you
we
love,
met him.
And you love coffee.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there were some kind of surfacey level things that we could start talking about. But that pretty quickly led to let's just be real with each other. And I think it helps that they also were the kind of people that wanted deeper friendships and didn't want to stay on the surface. You know, and so there is that. If you're willing to be vulnerable, but the other person's not, it's not going to go anywhere. Yeah.
So I think an advantage we had there is that we were neighbors.
Yeah.
And so it's like you're in proximity.
Yeah.
Which helped a lot. But what if someone doesn't have that? A lot of neighbors don't know neighbors. You know, I mean, after they moved out and other people moved out, remember that point in time? It's like we didn't know anyone around us.
It was so weird. It was so weird.
And that's so common. That's a lot of people's lives is they come home, pull the car into the garage, go in the house, and they come outside to mow the yard, but you never interact with your neighbors. And so when proximity isn't working for you, it's like, what do stay-at-home parents do? And the whole idea of being intentional, of how did you find people, and what groups and specifically were you connected with, or even as a homeschool mom, like things that you did?
Well, and I was going to say, that's the thing, is as the kids got older too, there were more things that we were getting involved with them becoming older. But even when they were little, and so we didn't have those homeschool groups, that was when we were going to the gymnastics place for their free play. That's when we were going to the park when the weather was nice. And I mean, we went to the park a lot. We basically lived there. Because that's where other parents are going to go as well. Go where the people are. but I think as the kids got older, we started having just different classes that we would attend. And, we're part of the Wild and Free group for homeschooling. And so our local Wild and Free group is massive. I do mean massive. It's probably one of the biggest in the country. And so there's tons of people. The downside to that is you go to an event and it's not all the same people. It's like you're meeting new people constantly. The good side is if you meet somebody and you connect, you just both have to be intentional about actually making something happen to actually hang out again.
So personality style matters immensely here. And there's a part of your personality style that you can be very engaging in the extroverted side of you. Mm-hmm. On the DISC profile, the high I in you is all about people. But the S and C in you
is the
majority of you and is the introverted side.
Yep.
So if you're the stay-at-home parent that's like, gosh, that just sounds so hard for me and intimidating and I'm shy and I'm introverted, like how do they get going? And because that's partially you.
Yeah, I had to push through some of that. I mean, because, and even now I find that I have to, because our daughter, our older daughter, wants to go out and do more things than I do. I'm like, I want to just be at home. Thank you very much. And so I find that I have to push through and just make things happen. And just, sometimes I'll just put it on the calendar. It was easier for me to do it if I had it on my calendar. It was almost, I don't know why I was allowing myself to be ruled by a piece of paper, but there it was.
I think it's helpful. It serves almost like as in a form of motivation or accountability for you to do
the
that
other thing. Is
it's
I
like
would,
you've said you've committed yourself to doing it.
I was going to say the other thing is I would, if there was, I forget the name of the app, but there was this like meetup app or group something app. And so I would commit to going to an event. And I tried to be really careful to only commit to things that I really was going to go to and not be one of those people that said, I'm going, and then not show up. I mean, I know things happen, right? Kids get sick or whatever. But I try not to be that person as much as possible. And so if I had committed to going, it's like, man, I got to make this happen. Even if that morning I'm just like, I'm tired. I didn't sleep well last night. I really don't want to go. You know, I said I'd go. I need to make that happen.
So switching topics.
Yeah.
How did you get to a place of thinking that being a parent or being at home and not having a career and using your education, how did you get to a place of thinking that this is where you belong?
I think it took a lot of different things. It took part of it, I think, is just settling in. I mean, you just have to settle into what you're doing and accept that this is where you're at. For whether that's a season or the rest of your life. Well, I mean, eventually kids will leave home, you think. But, you know, so there is that level of settling in. Part of it was the kids were getting older and I was able to do more things that just kind of fed myself, whether that's mentally, physically, emotionally, whatever. I was able to just pour into my own desires and things that I enjoy a little bit more. And then just other friendships and having other people to talk to and to bounce ideas off of or whatever, that all of that was a part of it.
Yeah, it's like it's a lot of things. So what do you think a lot of parents struggle with that are struggling with just settling in or realizing that, wow, this is really where I belong and that's a good thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I didn't actually think about this until this very second, but there's this part of me initially that was fighting it. I didn't want to move to the South again. I didn't want to just be a stay-at-home mom. I didn't want. And so I was just fighting it in my spirit instead of just saying, this is where I'm at and just accepting it and knowing maybe this is for a month, maybe this is for 10 years. I don't know, but I'm just going to choose to accept it.
So as we were heading toward Tennessee, we knew we were heading back here for a long time.
Well, you say
that. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because we actually thought we may end up in Tahoe in California.
That was the bait for me to get here.
That was the bait. It was like your cup of tea. Oh, it's waiting for you, Mary Beth. And then we took it away from you.
I know.
Because we're mean.
Mean people.
But, you know, it's like we knew this was coming. This move was coming. But I think it's like at that point in time, I think going back to your expectations, you thought it was going to be different when we got here.
Yeah.
And then it's all of a sudden, boom, this is very different. And do you think that was the fight period then, was the resetting of expectations?
Yeah, I think so. And I think also in part because I didn't know at that time the whole idea of resetting expectations. So at the time...
Yeah, this was pre a lot of self-awareness for both of us.
Yeah. And so I didn't realize that I was fighting, I think, instead of just going, okay, this is going to be different. Let me just change my expectations and settle in.
Yeah, you're struggling.
I was struggling.
There's no perspective on really like, oh, I'm fighting myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
It's just a struggle and it's just emotional and it's just hard.
Yeah.
So changing topics again here to this whole idea of viewing yourself as equally important of a spouse. We'll land this right in the marriage context. Is how often do you think a mom or a parent doesn't treat themselves as, quote, equally important in the family? And why is it so important for them to see themselves as equally important?
So I think for a lot of moms, we don't view ourselves as equally important at all. We're there to serve our spouses, our children, especially in that stay-at-home role. It's almost this idea of that is your job, is to serve everybody. And not that there's anything wrong with serving everybody, but it can definitely get to this point of I'm serving them because I'm below them. And that's so unhealthy. And I mean, if you don't see that you're important, at least for me, when I was in that stage, there was just this sadness. I wouldn't go so far as to say that I was struggling with depression, but I wasn't happy, you know? And so it felt like nothing was about me anymore. And it's totally true. There was some victim mentality going on there of just everything is about it was like Eeyore. Everything is about everybody else. Nothing is about me. And I just got into this kind of negative self-talk place. And honestly, when you think about it, if you're in that place, how happy are you to truly be serving your children or your spouse? They're going to pick up on that, man, she, or if it's the dad, he doesn't want to do this. He doesn't want to be here with me. And there's almost this like, it's about me. They don't want to be with me feeling that can be received from somebody. And so it is really important to take care of yourself and to value yourself that, you know, not in a I'm putting myself first kind of way, but in a I'm going to do things or ask my spouse to help me do things to take care of myself.
How much do you think especially in the West, because there's people that actually listen to this podcast that are in different places in the world than the West, meaning like the United States, Europe, and West. But how much do you think, especially the culture that we grew up in, which is United States culture, generally speaking, makes this worse of the, oh, you're just a mom, you're just doing these things? Because the whole context of what we're talking about right now is what's important. Well, these things aren't important, so therefore, I'm not important. And we make a direct correlation between the tasks and the things that we do every day back to identity, self-perception of the things I do just aren't good enough, so therefore, I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
It's like, what if you're someone listening to this and that's where they're at and that's what they're struggling with? Like, what do they do and what do you tell them?
Well, it's funny because when you think about it, as a stay-at-home parent, you are shaping your child. You're shaping their future. You're shaping their mind and their mindsets. And I mean, that's a lot of power. It's a lot of influence. And it is incredibly important. But in the day-to-day tasks, you're not thinking, I'm shaping my child's life. You're thinking, oh my gosh, how many times are you going to poop today? how many times do I have to change a stinky
just
diaper?
Eat the thing.
Or yes,
just eat the thing.
Stop putting the peas in your nose.
Exactly.
It's like, oh my gosh. And so in those day-to-day moments, you're not thinking big picture. And so it can feel just I want to say mundane, but it can feel menial. It can feel like this is nothing.
Like this is my life.
This is my life. And this is dumb. But you got to remember just the influence that you have over, you know, even your spouse but your children and your spouse and who all you are influencing in what you're doing.
How does a parent keep that perspective when they're simply trying to get a pee out of a nose?
I'm sorry. That was a great visual. Blow.
Yeah, it's like how do you keep that perspective when you're dealing with the poop and the disobedience, or to be very serious about this, your child who has trauma, who's being awful and trying to control the home and is yelling and screaming at you. How do you keep that perspective?
I think there's a lot of different things. Part of it is breaks. You've got to get away from the actual tasks for some period of time, whether that is daily, whether that is weekly, but it does need to be regularly. Another thing, one thing that really helped me, and this is, again, I'm the studious person. So I read some really great books that were just really encouraging to me and uplifting and showing the value of motherhood and the value of what I was doing. So even if in those moments I wasn't remembering, it was that truth that I could come back to.
Yeah, I think that's a powerful thing, is what is the truth you come back to? Because I think that if we're not careful of how this stuff is messaged or in our society, is that, you know, that hey, you should be operating every second of every day with this truth and this perspective that you're shaping your child's life. I think there can be a lot of shame that people can feel, because they can feel like, oh, I'm failing at doing that, or because I must be the ungrateful parent that doesn't enjoy their kids. And I'm like, if you are listening to people like that, get them out of your life. Or if you're hearing things like that, make sure that's not you that's filtering messaging like that. That's why I'm wanting to be very clear about this, is because it's kind of like having a mission in a business, that this is who we are and why we exist, or you're shaping your child's life. And it's like, if you're not constantly thinking that, you're somehow a failure or a bad person, or, and I'm like, that is not at all the case. I think it's the thing that's so powerful is what's the truth and perspective that you come back to help orient yourself. And if you can grow in that, in those moments, and be able to remember and grow in that perspective in the mundane, that's wonderful. And it's going to serve you well. But we also have to be like, okay, let's be realistic and practical here. Yeah. That's not going to be all the time, is it?
Right. No, definitely not. So I think that's where you have to be intentional about seeking out that encouragement in the different arenas that's going to serve you that way.
So you mentioned some books that have helped you. What are some of those books that helped you as a parent and helped you, especially I think the context of what we were talking about then was in the mundane, in the task, trying to get the pee out of the nose moment of your life.
So I like onto that one.
I love that visual of like what were those books that helped you so much?
So, you know, this is of course a fostering focused podcast, and I really, because this struggle for me happened pre-fostering days. So, but those, the books, the two that I'm going to mention.
But they weren't pre-marriage days.
No, they were small people days.
Yeah.
So the book Long Days of Small Things by Catherine McNeil was so impactful to me, because it gets into just all of the sacred ways that you can connect with God even through these mundane moments. So I loved that book. And I'll tell you, anything by Sally Clarkson, I'm on board with. I love her. I think she's phenomenal. The one book that I'd specifically mention is The Ministry of Motherhood, because that whole book is really about your role in ministering to your children. But honestly, one of her latest books, look up Sally Clarkson. Anyway, it's just fantastic, because it's using your language and how you speak to your children to shape them and to influence them. And, you know, that is actually one that has been helping me as we've been fostering, and just where I didn't struggle so much in, shall we say, being a good parent, if you will, with our two biological children, because we just had that bond. But then we brought this trauma child into our home who, I mean, there was abuse and yelling and so much stuff that came with him that there was a lot of self-management for me and just trying to be a calm, patient person. So Giving Your Words, that book, that, and I'm actually still reading it because I'm reading it very slowly. But yeah, four children. But it's so been so impactful, and just this constant pouring into me of a reminder of your tone matters, your words matter, and all these things. So anything by Sally Clarkson. Yeah.
So what's your advice to spouses that are not the stay-at-home parent, the spouses that aren't struggling with this identity crisis? What's your advice to those spouses to be in order to support their spouse who is struggling with this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think one of the most powerful things you can do is listen and hear them, help them know that they're heard, you know. But equally important is making sure that your spouse who is struggling is getting away a little bit and is having a little bit of a break. Because I think a lot of people who go into foster care, they're just the sacrificial, loving kind of people. And so, man, and I think we've talked about this before, but you come home from work and I don't want to feel like I'm giving you more tasks. And yes, you're going to come home and help parent anyway, but I don't want you to feel like I'm leaving it all on you and me just walking out and going and doing my own thing. But the truth of the matter is, if you're a stay-at-home parent, you are parenting 24/7 and you have to take care of yourself. And so I think I mentioned this on a previous episode, but this is not playtime. I mean, it can be, but it's recovery time. You have to go and fill yourself up with things that are going to help you recover. And, you know, what are your interests? Do you love to paint? Do you love to read? Find a book club, find a painting place, go out with your best friend for coffee. What is it that's going to fill you up that is not going to be focused on the children?
So this is obviously, as you mentioned, this is a fostering podcast, but even more so, like, this is a marriage podcast.
Yeah.
And so when you're the spouse who's struggling, let's say you're the one that feels like my identity is in being a parent, my identity is even being in a fostering parent, and that's who I am, is that can lead to lots of emotional struggles, distress. It can lead to depression. It can lead to all kinds of just different emotions. If you're that, what's your advice to that couple that if that's where one of them is and they're contributing to conflict in a lot of ways because they feel angry or they feel jealous that their spouse gets to go to work all the time, what's your advice to that parent who's at home who is struggling so much?
Get some help. And I don't mean that flippantly. I mean, there are amazing counselors who you can talk to. You know, if hopefully your spouse, you can talk to your spouse about this and work through some things with them. But if you can't, or maybe in conjunction with that, I mean, it may get to a point where you're like, I just need to talk to somebody to help me process through, because there have been so many emotions I know that we've had to process through since fostering, of from grief to, you know, and a lot of this wasn't even necessarily expected, you know, and if you don't have somebody to talk to, it can be really challenging. So find somebody to talk to about it.
What if you're the spouse that sees your spouse struggling so much as being a fostering parent and their identity is in parent and they are struggling big time, but you're not the spouse who's struggling with stuff like that. What's your advice to that spouse on being, should they be like, hey, here's how, what you need to do or encourage or support, or like, what should they do?
I think you need to get them help, but do it in a really gentle way, because sometimes people just don't want to be fixed, or, you know, like, I don't need to be fixed. Is there something wrong with me? There's nothing wrong with me, you know, and there can be a defensiveness there potentially. You know, I'm just speaking in random generalities here, but, you know, you could, as the non-struggling spouse, just be like, hey, it just looks like you're really struggling, and I care about you, and I love you, and I want to help you, and I want to support you. And, you know, here are some of my thoughts on how we can do that, you know, and whether that's that parent getting away for a weekend or that parent seeking a counselor or whatever, you know, you think would be helpful for your spouse. Just maybe offer those as suggestions. Do any of those think, you know, do you think any of those will help you? Do you want to try any of those? How are you feeling? I think even just starting with how are you feeling is a great place to start.
Yeah, that's excellent. So thank you for being on your own podcast.
And, oh, you're so welcome. And being, I was here anyway.
In all seriousness, like, no, thank you for your wisdom and insights and vulnerability. Again, you are in our relationship. You're the stay-at-home parent.
Yeah.
And you're the one in the thick of it. And I've always had that appreciation and perspective that your job is a lot harder than mine. I don't say that to sound like a good person. I say that because it's true. And that's a real thing. And I think for those spouses that are not the stay-at-home, you need to recognize that. You need to recognize how hard it is to be a parent, or how hard it is to be on the weekends. So let's say when you're home and you're like, man, I'm glad that it's Monday because I get to go back to work. It's like, what would that be like 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, minus sleeping? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Well, except, you know, think about, I mean, babies wake up, kids have night terrors. It's not minus sleeping.
No, that's a great point.
It's 24/7.
Yeah, exactly. So next month, guys, this is a two-part series on identity. Next month, we're going to go deeper into identity and self-perception, looking at how it shows up and how it affects you, and even more on how it affects your marriage. So as always, if you enjoy this podcast, rate and review it wherever you listen. It helps other fostering families find it. And follow us on Facebook at Fostering Marriage. We hope this has been helpful for you. Join us on the next episode of the Fostering Marriage podcast.